proceed to the third case of the day, Sons and Adams versus GG Services.
Please the court, counsel. The Fair Debt Collection Practices Act requires written notice of the debtor's right to dispute the debt. This is the defendant's notion of a written notice. The originals of the document sent to the two plaintiffs are part of the record, and this is a similar letter. As set forth in our expert's report and in the Painting with Print article on the court's website, there are a number of recognized devices for making text either easy to read or hard to read.
You must have shown us the back of it, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
The
front is very easy to read.
Right.
Bright colors, lots of space between the words. The back, on the other hand, has every known method applied to it.
The yellow highlighting in the originals in the record was...
Yes.
Was not part of what was sent out, was it?
Yes, it is not applied.
The yellow is... The way you have here, Judge Farm is holding that up. That's how the debtor receives the letter, with that highlighting in.
We do not apply anything whatsoever to those letters. The front is highlighted.
Is the one that you just held up have highlighting?
This one does not. It's used during the same period with a similar back.
But there's no highlighting on that, and there is on this.
Correct, but that is part of the original. What they did was use...
Who provided, who put the highlighting on it?
That is part of the letter as it was generated by GC.
The GC put the highlighting on.
That is correct, on the front. Plaintiffs have not... Plaintiffs didn't do anything to the letters. We didn't do anything to the letters. That's how it goes into the mail. The back has the following done to it to degrade the readability of the text. Light gray lettering on cream or dull white paper. Low font weight, which requires that approximately half of the pixels that comprise each letter be white. Long lines with narrow margins, the use of French and Spanish translations of the notice to occupy the entire page when the operative demand portion of the letter is only in English, all capital letters with very little space between the letters, full justification so that the eye can't pause or identify the line where one is at if one stops while reading the text. Now, the law has long recognized that the visual overshadowing or degrading of a notice in this manner is illegal. In this court's Bartlett decision, the court endorsed the concept that, quote, the required notice might be overshadowed just because it was in smaller or fainter print than the demand for payment, close quote, and also referred to, quote, the kind of literal overshadowing involved in a fine print or faint print or confusing typeface case, close quote. That's at page 500 of 128 F3rd. In Coleman versus Jackson, the Second Circuit condemned, quote, formats or typefaces which tend to obscure important information that appears in the notice, close quote. Now, it's not necessary that the notice be totally illegible. And the reason for that is, as again pointed out by our expert and in the Painting with Print article, and is recognized by the cases, selectively degrading parts of a written document make it discourage people from paying attention or reading to the degraded portion. In Sire versus Management Adjustment, a district court in the Second Circuit, applying the Coleman test, recognized that similar presentational devices, quote, discourage the reading of the notices in the back, close quote. Here it is quite clear that there was a purposeful effort to degrade the text. Just by looking at it, GC had to go to a substantial amount of trouble to get the notice to come out like this. No typesetting or word processing program produces text that's scrunched up like this. You normally don't see text that's all capitals with no little spacing between the lines. Somebody had to provide the French and Spanish translations on a letter which is not written in either of those languages. It's also not done on some other GC services letters. The ones it produces for the Department of Education, and which were involved in the Peters versus GC case, did not have this. The notices were in the same text, were simply part of the text of the letters, which is what most debt collectors use. I think it's reasonable for no debt collector, GC or anyone else, would present the demand portion of its letters using the font on the back while presenting the notice using the devices on the front of these letters, making it clear and easy to read. Nevertheless, had summary judgment entered against us. Judge Moon first concluded, although there's a great disparity in ease of reading between the front and the back of the documents, that the notification was not so difficult that it should violate the law. In other words, Judge Moon, upon studying the back under ideal conditions for the, and having his attention directed to the back, being required to read it in connection with the case, could read it. That is not the test. Judge Moon also held that intent is not an element of an FDCPA violation. Well, it is not an essential element in the sense that you have to prove it in order to make out a case. But in the Gammon versus GC case, a 1994 case against the same defendant, this court concluded that a purposeful effort to convey a message to a consumer is indicative of what message is in fact conveyed. Defendant is an expert in consumer communications. It knows how to get a message across to debtors. If it goes to a lot of trouble to convey a message in this manner, then one can reasonably infer that the methods selected were suitable to carrying out that purpose. And the only purpose disclosed by this is to be able to point to the physical presence of the words, while in fact conveying no notice, no information in most cases. Judge Moon then decided that although Professor Shanahan's report was admissible, it was not persuasive. That, I think, is a clear invasion of the province of a jury. The ground on which he said it was not persuasive was that it only shows how Dr. Shanahan reacted, but that actually is the one thing which his report does not state. It goes into the difficulty of the statutory text. It cites, as does the painting with print article, studies showing the extent to which the various presentational devices degrade reading speed and readability of text, and comes to the conclusion that this is not an effective way of conveying information. Not really was did Judge Moon reach these conclusions, but he also prevented us from putting in any evidence and obtaining discovery concerning GC's intent. We first filed a 56F motion asking for discovery. We then actually obtained a good part of the information we were seeking in connection with another case in Indiana. And what it shows is, first, that GC's initial story that the back of this represents some sort of in-house printing problem was total nonsense. The backs were produced by an outsource printing house called Verlizen. Verlizen had been instructed to make the to run the backs at 50, 60, or 65%. GC had, in a case in Texas, agreed to an injunction against using this kind of device on the back of its letters. In the face of that injunction, additional stacks of paper with the light print were obtained from Verlizen. GC was then sued in Pennsylvania, New York, and several other places. It settles those cases individually and then finally stops using the light print. So they went to a great deal of trouble to create these letters, and then they seemed to lie about what they were doing when they were challenged. I think under those circumstances, either these letters violate the FDCPA as a matter of law, or it is a question for the jury whether this is a written notice as required by the statute. There's no great impact on legitimate debt collection efforts. Most debt collectors simply make the statutory notice part of the text, which is easy when you omit the extraneous translations. Standard is easily supplied either by the text used in the demand portion of the letter, or by simply using ordinary typeface, such as you find in the printed United States Code, which people can read and which does not have these characteristics calculated to result in no information being conveyed. Unless Your Honors have some questions, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Edward. Mr. Schultz?
Please, the court, counselor. This is a Fair Debt Collection Practices case based on a first letter. It's actually two first letters. And this court has had a number of these cases and has developed somewhat of a way of analyzing them, basically a three-step process of sorts. And there's a number of cases in the last 12 months that have done that. One, first, you can look at yourself, fear judge. You can look at yourself and say, does this letter overshadow or not? That's the issue, overshadowing.
Why do you have the back in French and Spanish and English is a third of the back and the front is all in English?
There's no requirement of the FDCPA or in any regulations by the FTC or anybody dealing with what language must be on that. None. Predominantly, they use English because they know they have to do at least that in order to get the message across. There's a significant population of Spanish-speaking people. GC Services is a large agency and it's based in Houston, Texas. Large organization with many accounts in Texas and in California. It is absolutely common within the industry to have Spanish on the back. In addition, GC Services has an extensive amount of practice in Canada, in a large Canadian population there. Now, what they've done, you've seen, is that on the, I believe it's the Sims letter, they do not have French on the back because at some point within the last 2 years or so, they opened up a Canadian office actually to largely deal with the Canadian-speaking population. I don't think in any way they should be criticized for having what Mr. Edelman and others have said are the most important rights under the statute. And they put them in the, supposedly the most important rights under statute, and they put it in a language that they believe that the recipients will absolutely read and understand. So that is, I think, that is the purpose for that.
Why? It looks to me, now, everybody would look at this maybe differently, but when I looked at it, very hard to figure out. You lose interest in reading anything in the back the way this letter. This letter, I'll tell you, I would not read anything in that back when I look.
Getting back to my point, there's three ways to look at it. One, you can do what you just talked about. A judge can look at it and read it. And that's what Judge Mim did. That's what other judges have done in cases involving these letters. And they've decided, you can read that. I can read that. I understand that. I can see that. And they have different versions, I think. What I'm looking at is the Adams one, and that's completely clear. That's one of the tests, and of course, we talked about that in April in the Taylor case, and the Olson case, and the Chue case all this year. That you can simply do that. Next, if you choose it and say, well, I'm a judge, I'm not sure if I can decide whether or not that's overshadowing, I can go, then the next step is the plaintiff have the burden. Can they meet their burden? Is something wrong with that? Can they meet their burden? And what the courts have said, and again, it was three cases, mainly by Easterbrook in 2000, the Johnson, Marshmallows being Walker cases, and then most recently, this court in the Durkin case discussed that. If the judge won't decide it, can't decide it, doesn't believe he should decide it, then the plaintiff has to come forth with competent, essentially survey evidence, is what they've talked about in each of those cases, survey evidence of some sort to demonstrate an increased confusion by the consumers as a consequence of the whatever it is that's allegedly violative. They have not done that here. They have not done that at all.
Well, exclusively you can do it. Why can't you do it like the plaintiff's tried to do it here with an expert witness?
Well, that was what was talked about in the Durkin case. They had somebody just like this, a readability person. And the court rejected it completely. At least that expert, if you read in the opinion, that expert at least tried to say what the unsophisticated consumers would do or not do. This expert doesn't even use the words unsophisticated consumer at all. Now I think just okay to look at it and decide. And it's important. If you look at it, right in the front, with the biggest letters, this guy's notes, colors, notes, and then it's in caps as well. See reverse side for important consumer information. That's what the front's telling them. And the biggest letters there, underlined, capital. Then it goes in the back, and it's got right there, and it's in different variations, as you got from the record. First, it's got the right out of the statute, the mandatory 1692E11 language, right out of the statute, underlined in caps, not being challenged on that. Then it's got the statement, consumer information, underlined in caps. It's right there. It's clear. And it actually goes on, the last part of the sentence is somewhat taken out, I think, probably from the Bartlett opinion that Judge Posner wrote in 97 or so. The last part, separated a little bit, is additional language. They don't need to say that. But they go on further, you make it clear that the demand for payment is going to not reduce your rights to dispute the debt. And they go beyond what they have to say, what Congress has said they have to say. Now, what about this? And I feel Judge Miller was correct. I've been a number of cases involved in this. Even the Youngblood case that he talks about, they won the Youngblood case. They won it. Another situation. Same circumstances. So that at least two judges come out with rulings on this. And then if you look at the record in the Lucas case, which has been referred to, you know, I think you're going to come out the same way with that. There's a judge looking at it and say, I'm not, I think you can read this, I can read it. What does Dr. Shannon do? He does not, it's important. He never considered these letters. Look at his importance for a different case. Never looked at these letters. Never in his report does he consider a first letter, and these are first letter cases. These are 692G letter cases. Therefore, he never had an opportunity to look and see this, the comments in the front about notice, see the other side for important consumer information. Never considered that. Plaintiffs and Dr. Shane talk about how it's important to look at the front and the back and considering these things. They talk about that in paragraphs 18 and 19 of their amended complaint that's before the court. Dr. Shannon says so in his report. He wanted to wait here. Never. Now, what is also, he never, ever says anyone in the report, unlike even the expert in Durkin that this court rejected, he never says anything about the unsophisticated consumer. Nothing. Never talks about the standards that this court has developed. Never talked about the increased likelihood of confusion. Never uses the term significant percentage, significant fraction of confusion. All of those are the terms that this court has dictated is a test, is a standard to be applied in these cases. That is why Judge Miller didn't think this would create a material issue of fact, at least in part. Now, it's also interesting, he never says anything about criticizing the Spanish or the French.
No, Mr. Schultz, much of what you say is obviously rings true, if not all of it, as to context and language and the rest. Is there any reason my concern is, and I don't speak to the text or the size of the print or the space, this incredibly light print on the reverse side. It's so light, maybe the paper can't handle it. I don't know, because I notice as I hold this up, taking it out of the cell phone, the front part bleeds through.
That's part of the reason for the gray.
I guess that's pretty friendly stuff on the part of JC to highlight the front. But it actually impacts the readability if it holds up. Or not. Actually, with the red bleeds through, you can read the services if you provide, if you notify language. It's a pretty matter. It can't be made as heavy as...
It isn't pretty bad, Judge. They buy the stock. There's all these different rights you have to put in the letters. There's ones that are mandated by the federal government. And then what you found in the industry, and I'm sure you're aware of this, is that all these different states, there's at least seven different state requirements that you got to comply with. So you got to put all these different things. So what happens in the industry is that they'll have these backers printed. Now, they don't print the batteries themselves in this instance. GC Services is huge. They're sending out millions and millions of letters. And they have, for cost reasons, use this company called Verizon. And Verizon has the stack, and they print out the stack. And they print out 6 months, at least at a time, of two different types of stack. And every month, you get a letter.
Are you saying it's sort of industry standard to have this lighter?
No, I'm not saying it's industry standard to have it lighter. But that's what I'm explaining, how it was printed in different manners. You have the back is the stack that's been purchased. And then over time, there was a different shading. This is not in the record necessarily here, but to explain it to the courts. You know, when GC Services was printing these things in the 80s and things, the technology was different, and there was bleeding through, and so they had the gray in the back to help prevent being difficult to read. And that's why it's just developed over time. And as over time, they have changed the format of the letters. That's just simply what's happened. And I think, Mr. Allen will complain about the most recent changes in the letter. He's pinpointing this particular point in time for that. Now, if you look at the Chairman Ranger report, besides the other criticisms that we have, which I think are just lethal, just kill him. What did he say? He talks about one, and then he'll talk about the complaint. Right justification. Well, first of all, one of the two letters, there isn't a problem with right justification. And then he says in his report, right justification in 1970 test indicated that it may be difficult for poor readers to read it, and then he goes on and says, however, this finding is never replicated. That's not exactly scientific evidence. He talks about caps, and they talk about two as well as that reference to the website article that you have. And when we talk about the capital letters, it says, well, it could slow down the reading a little bit. How much? 13%, I think, is what the court said. It could slow down the reading. So instead of 10 seconds, it's going to take 11. Instead of 20 seconds, it's going to take 21, 22. And what? Slow down the reading for the most important rights the consumer has. I don't think you should be penalized for that. Now, he also talks about shading. The other kind of lesson is about shading. What does he talk about shading? He says, well, if you had, with the shading, if you had poor eyesight, if you were reading it in poor light, or if you were a certain age, you had a problem with it. I don't think we can account for that, but I think the most important thing that you notice in his survey, in his article, is what does he say? He says, in the middle of page 3, and this is really where the article goes, he says, I estimate that the language, the 690G language, to be at a college level, and therefore 49%, 100 million people will understand it. That's what he says. That's his problem. He's complaining of the 692G language, and that language is taken right on the stage, and it's exactly the kind of thing they put. And that's the part of his complaint. He talks about half the country can't read because they don't understand what the words are being required by law to put in letter. And then he goes from there and says, you take that problem, and then he says, in his mind, he says, I imagine those other things. It's difficult for several reasons, each of which I think are flawed for comments that I just made, for reasons I just made. Now, this is not something that will survive. You've talked about the standards. You've created the standards. And this industry follows those standards. And all the courts at the trial level follow them. You look at the letter and decide it. If not, when they got a summary judgment, if they come forth with the evidence, the survey evidence, you decide whether or not it's sufficient to meet the burden or not. They didn't hear it. Judgment was correct. And I request that this court affirm judgment.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. Mr. Edelman? Your Honors, with reference to Dr. Shanahan's report, none of his conclusions are in any way different from what later was posted on this court's website in the Painting with Print article, including the studies regarding the effect of these various presentational devices on readability.
Well, he wrote these letters.
There is a
direct conflict.
In his report, he did address these and a considerable number of other GC Services letters generated during the same time frame.
But the record will reflect he identified the Adams and the
Simba letters. Yes, Your Honor. Second, some of GC's explanations are just nonsense. The FDCPA isn't in effect in Canada. The American statute, I thought. It may be common for the collection industry to use a Spanish translation of collection letters, where it's sent in Spanish to someone who is expected to be Spanish-speaking. I have never seen a letter, and nobody suggests that a letter exists, where the operative demand portion of the letter is in English, and the statutory notice is in three languages. Makes no sense.
How do we know what letters were examined here?
He says,
the names of the recipients of these letters that he examines are all blacked out.
I thought an unredacted version was supplied, but he. The fact is, he does reference.
Well, I'm not looking at the original in the file. I'm looking at the copy of the report that was part of the briefs in this case, and it's every. The recipient of every letter, and he talks about a whole bunch of them here. And there's just some reference number.
In most cases he did, but he does specifically reference, and it is not deleted, Sandra Adams, June 20th, 03 letter, June 27th, 03 letter, Charles O. Sims, August 29th, 03 letter. It's page 29 of our appendix. The ones that were obscured were the ones that are not plaintiffs. So he does reference that. Durkin does not, in all cases, require a survey. It requires a competent expert, a survey, or other appropriate proof. The surveys that have been conducted in this area are surveys of showing the effect of the various presentation of devices on reading speed. The difficulty with the survey consisting of showing the letters to people is that the conduct of the survey itself affects the result. If you ask people to read the letter in a controlled setting, it is hard to measure it's impossible to measure accurately the effect of degrading the text on whether somebody will simply ignore that portion of the text, even if there is a reference on the front.
How do we establish which I am basically if it's just some subjective analysis of what one thinks a limited sight or limited reader has?
The baseline comments come in the cases involving additions to the text of the other letter. And the problem is that, as Dr. Shanahan points out, the statutory text is itself a college-level text. And it would be necessary to show that adding words, the added words used by the debt collector, have some impact. There is, however, no statutory permitted amount of degradation of the text. The baseline should be either the debt collector's own letter, the text of which is quite clear and it does not bleed through, only the orange or the colored matter bleeds through.
Make some concluding remarks.
I think that we have a competent record showing that purposeful degradation of the text was used, and I submit that whatever else a written notice consists of, an attempt to not convey information is not written notice. Thank you, Your
Honor. Thanks to all counsel.
Question for Mr. Schultz. If you look at page 8, then, of the report from Shanahan, do you agree that the letters, the Adams and Sims letters, were actually looked at? You told us that he didn't look at them.
Other ones are in the stack of 36. Well, as part of the report to analyze the way you get the first part, these are the six letters. We never talked about the fronts of these letters on the third letter. We did not do the same analysis as those two letters. Yes, six letters.
Okay.
Thank you. The case is taken.